The House Labor and Commerce Committee is hereby called to order at 3:28 on Monday, May 5th, 1997. Present are Representative Rutherford, Representative Cadre, Representative Sanders, and Representative Hudson. We do have a quorum for business. Today, we're going to be taking up, as the first order of business, a oversight hearing on the State Recorder's Office. Then we'll move from that to Senate Bill 88, House Bill 203, House Bill 142, and if there is time, get to Senate Bill 126 and possibly House Bill 209. The public hearing for House Bill 178, Uniform Commercial Code Letter of Credit, will be not be conducted today. It's the intention of the chair to move to hold this bill during the interim, make sure all the parties are in agreement to this legislation to ease its passage in the first part of the next session. So the public hearing and the discussion of House Bill 178, the UCC, will not be taken up today for everybody's information. Given that, I would like to open up this public hearing. Let the record show that Representative Bryce is in attendance. I'd like to open up the oversight hearing on the State Recorder's Office and ask that Mr. Robert Mosnick please come forward and give us his testimony. And for the purposes of the hearing today, I would ask that everybody identify themselves, their affiliation, and if they're on teleconference, to give us a phone number or contact point at which we can contact them. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Mosnick, and please identify yourself for the record, sir.
Okay, I'm Bob Mosnick of Mosnick Computer Services in Anchorage. First off, thank you for having this oversight hearing. As you probably know, for like 11 years now, we have processed all the recording office information on our computer. We have done most of the distribution of that data to the people that need it, the title companies, the banks, the collection agencies, state agencies, federal agencies, most of them. I started that back in 85. The distribution of the data, I had written the original recording office system back in 71 for the state, so I've written every program that's ever processed the recording office information. When I started putting it online, I went to the state, because they were still using the old system, the old card, the key punch card system, and told them that I would write their programs and perform their processing on our computer for them at no cost if they just would key into our computer. That would get the data more up to date, because at that point they were like 2 months behind getting a document through the old system. They agreed to do that, resulted in a, and we called it a zero-based contract. A key to that contract was that I had no rights to the data. Okay. It was a public file. The recorder's office was responsible for the content of the data. I did the programming and the processing. We agreed that I would cover the cost of the programming to their specifications. They designed the system, wrote the specifications for the system. I did the designing and the programming of it. The key to that was that enhancements after the original right of the system, the state would pay for. The state was also to pay for additional disk space and printing and a few more things. Gradually over the years, we dropped those requirements. We went to a cooperative agreement in 1991, okay, as opposed to a zero-based contract, so that the state could make it easier for the state to pay part of the cost of enhancements. I performed enhancements at no cost, and one of the problems that we have currently is that the DNR is saying one of the reasons that they needed this $1.2 million to do the system themselves is because I would not do all of the enhancements they wanted at no costs. And that was never in the contract. The state was supposed to pay for enhancements. I provided enhancements, several of them at no cost, and continue to do so but, you know, I was never obligated to do so. What this is mounted to is we're basically into a turf war here. The recorder's office, or DNR, has been trying to perform this processing on their own for, and we've made several attempts. The last attempt was $1.2 million in this year's budget to replace what we're doing. Last year it was $440,000. Some years before that it was $330,000. They've always intended to take this back if they could. As my understanding, the $1.2 million, they did not get that. Okay. The problem I have right now is that I have a letter from John Shively that says, effective July 1, 1997, they are going to take over the system on their own. They're going to make a skeletal system on the state machine. And his letter says that they will have a hard time doing that, that there will be disruptions in recorder's office data and backlogs at the recorder's office. Okay, now that, to me, is very irresponsible. Now, I've run this system for, you know, back since 71, so 27 years. Okay, there's never been a data interruption, and a self-induced one is a threat to get funding, I think, is irresponsible. Part of that public, that press release was that the reason they have to do this on July 1 is that I have refused to continue processing for free. And that is not true. I wrote them a letter saying, we have to back up a little on this. About 2 years ago, the recorder changed the procedures that they use in entering names and addresses in their index system. Just a quick, the index system is, and the best comparison is in a phone book. You know, you go to the recorder's office system, you want to try to find documents. You want to see if somebody's got a judgment on them. So what you do is you look in the equivalent of a phone book and an alphabetical list to try to find what's on that name. Okay. There are hundreds or thousands of documents out there that you could not find. Okay. Part of that packet was I printed off some of the indexing errors that are occurring. Documents are being indexed under the first name. You know, one I put in there was John Flora or something like that. Now, you could not find it under Flora because they indexed it under John. Okay, you would never find that document. She has instructed them to key the name exactly as it is on the document. So if the document says, quote, C Street Auto, you can't find that document under C. You have to go look under quote. Okay, this is a big thing. Okay, there's already been one court case a year ago where Sharon had to write an affidavit that the document was indexed under the wrong name and under the wrong property description. The bankruptcy court ruled that that was the equivalent of not being recorded. They told Pacific Rim Title that they did not have to pay title insurance on that because the document was completely indexed wrong, therefore it was the equivalent of not recorded. Now, why that person didn't turn around and sue the state for that $100,000, I don't know. Okay, I've been trying to get attention to this. The title companies have also been trying to get her to clean this up. For quite a while, she would not acknowledge it. And now she's, and I, in my letter to her, I said, I will continue processing after July 1, 1997 for free, but I want you to address the errors in the data that you are keying. Key it as accurately as it has historically been, and I will process for free and no problem. Give me, I've been trying to resolve this for years. Give me somebody to negotiate with, and we can probably settle this up without the state paying anything in probably a couple hours. Okay. The state conducted a very extensive campaign for that $1.2 million. Sharon would call the title companies regular. I would get calls right after them calling me saying, hey, now she says this. You know. There was, Nico wrote a letter back. I'd written a letter to you guys, and Nico wrote a letter back saying a lot of my statements were not correct. The system that they proposed, I'll just run through a couple of those, and others people want to testify, and I'll try to wrap it up quick here. The system that the state wanted the $1.2 million for, okay? In their promotion of trying to get the users to agree to that system or to support that system, they said that this new system, if we have this 1.2 million, we will produce an index and image of the data, and you will be able to dial in and get that service from the state. Okay, one of the banks wrote a letter supporting her request. They turned around and called me the next day apologizing for writing that. They said the reason they wrote that letter was it affected their bottom line. She was promising services for free that they were now paying me for. Okay. Now, in Nico's letter, he says this new system is not going to compete with me. Well, if you're out promising my customers to provide my services for free, I mean, that's, you know, competition is one thing. I don't mind competing with the state, because if they had to charge what it costs them, then they can't compete with me. But if they give it to it for free, then they're putting me out of business. And it's not, you know, they're not going to put me out of business. I do too many things. Okay. Western Microfilm right now distributes the images of the documents. They microfilm all the documents, go to the recorder's office. If you want to copy the document, you can call Western Microfilm or your title company, or you can contact the recorder's office. But if the state's going to provide all those images for free, then Western Microfilm's out of business. Okay. The system that they are proposing or was trying to get the funding for, which they did not get, would have provided many services that are now provided by private enterprise. There's a batch of things that Nico had said, and I'm not sure we need to spend the time going through them. You can ask me questions if you want to. The main thing, you know, I'm just happy to have somebody listen to my side of it. It's been years where DNR has basically been trying to deprivatize this system. Right now, I save the state quite a bit of money. To me, that's worth something. That as a taxpayer, if I'm providing a service that's free to the state and then the state agency says no thank you, something's wrong. The 1.2 million that they requested for imaging is not the issue. Okay? Deprivatization is the issue. This is, like I say, this is a turf fight. They want to provide the services that we are providing and pay for it with public money. Okay, to me that's the issue. So kind of what I'm asking is, am I right or am I wrong? You know, if I'm wrong, good, I'll go away. You know, this is a hassle I don't need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mosnick. Are there questions of Mr. Mosnick, Representative Codrey?
Yeah. You've provided these services for quite some time.
11 years now.
11 years. How many, in your opinion, maybe I should add, I'll ask the other ones testify too, how many workers does your services displace, would you say?
Displace in?
You know, state workers or government workers.
If the state was, well, like they say, they are going to start doing the system on their own as of July 1. Okay, this means, first off, I don't see any way in the world they can possibly have it ready by July 1 without a crisis, which they write in their public service announcement, say there will be a crisis. There is a man year of programming and developing the system that we have right now. Okay. So there's one, you know, probably one, you know, say I programmed for 30 years. I mean, one good systems analyst with a programmer for a year to replace what they are getting for free. Okay, one of the complaints that Nico had put in here is that they don't own the software. Okay, that's their option. You know, when we first started this, I wrote the programs and they didn't want to pay anything for them. So I said, fine, I'll write the programs and you don't pay anything for them, but you don't own them. So if you want to own them, pay me. No problem.
It did.
Representative Codrey.
Thank you. I was just trying, well, you probably wouldn't know. Can I get to another area? This system, the present system, is going to be discontinued on June the 30th.
Right.
What will be in place July 1 then of 97 for the use of the public or other entities needing research of their records, such as title companies and realtors?
Chris, this is all I know. I got a letter from John Shively saying, thank you very much, you're done July 1. Okay, and in their public, in their press release, it says, DNR Commissioner John Shively announced the department will attempt to create an interim indexing program as a stopgap measure to allow recording offices to function until a long-term solution can be implemented. This will be a very bare-bones temporary solution. The public should anticipate there will be some disruption in service and possible backlogs as a result of having to create this interim system. You know, down here at the end, he says, he urges recording system users to make their concerns known to the legislators as soon as possible to help mitigate this potential crisis situation.
In your mind, does this mean that that documents recorded, say, on July 1 will not be entered into the system available to the public until a later date, or
that's
or
the question
any copies for review?
That's a question you have to ask them. I don't see how they could possibly have it ready July 1. I couldn't, if I started now with the staff that already knows the system, I could not rewrite the programs in 2 months.
Mr. Chairman, I know that we've got others to testify here, and I know we've got about an hour here, so I'd like to the people just to hold my question. I may have more questions of Mr. Mosdick, but at this time,
let me ask. I know there's a Sharon Young is in the available for testimony. There seems to be some kind of a problem with our monitoring. Is there anybody in the Anchorage LIO that wants to testify on this issue besides Ms. Young? So I asked if there is anybody in Anchorage LIO that wants to testify on this issue. Oh, couldn't hear you.
No one else on the oversight.
Thank you very much. Representative Cotter, if you had a few other questions.
I think that I would like, if we have time, to ask Bob maybe back later, but my questions I would like to ask the other.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that? Mr. Mosmick, if you could make yourself available for questioning from the committee, we'll move on with our testimony. next, we would... We have a Nico Bus and a Miss Young. Who wishes to go first? Ms. Bus, would you like to go?
I'll be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nico Bus. I'm the Administrative Service Manager for the Department of Natural Resources. And I'd like to kind of comment on the Recorder's Office operations and the relationship we have with Mr. Mosdick, and kind of tie in with where we see we are at, and then Ms. Young was going to comment through the Anchorage LIO on the operation. She's the state recorder. I'm the budget person, so I'll give the budget perspective. However, I'm also helping Ms. Young in administratively getting to some of these issues in terms of operational efficiencies. First of all, I want to acknowledge Mr. Mosnick's excellent service over the last 11 years. He has done us a great service, the state a great service, by providing this for free. The recorder's office, you know, basically got transferred to the Department of Natural Resources through the court system. We had very poor equipment, and Mr. Mosnick stepped in and really helped us out. We ended up with surplus terminals. They were dumb terminals, and Mr. Mosnick wrote a computer program, got us to where we were operational on the system that we are currently using. In 1990, the first agreement was up for renewal. Mr. Mosnick said he would do it again. We talked to him under the terms and conditions. And the one thing that Mr. Mosnick says is that, you know, it's a no-cost agreement. No cost to the state, but a lot of cost to him. You know, he has to maintain it and all this kind of thing. So clearly, that's been beneficial to us. The one problem that we run into is that Mr. Mosnick is driving a lot of the improvements that we would like to see. And oftentimes, maybe we would ask for these improvements in making the system more responsive to the user or for the state employees, then he had to evaluate whether or not either he had the time or if it costs some money and equipment and time, then he had to make that decision. And he has expressed repeatedly that he would like to see some reimbursement for that service. And I, as a manager, would like to do that because that way we have a contractual agreement that is beneficial to both of us. Now we try to make efficiencies in the office, specifically in relation to the way we do our operating budget. The recorder's office is at a very tight budget, as is all the state agencies, and we operate 14 different offices. Many of these are single staff persons, and when that person is not there, then we have a problem. So over the last number of years, we have worked very diligently in cleaning up our internal processes, getting that system to be more responsive, more accurate, and more importantly, to the point where we can not only do the recording, but we can also do our archiving responsibility, because we are way backlogged in our archiving responsibility. We can keep up with our recording responsibility, but then things go on the shelf and they're not getting archived. Our records and the Ombudsman did an investigation are deteriorating. They are getting lost to the public because they simply are getting too old. The microfiche data is fading, and the old original records, they are deteriorating to the point where they're falling apart, and we need to replace that. As in any industry, there's industry standards. And so we looked how other recording offices do that, and clearly there's models throughout the United States. Many offices are switching to new technology, different software system. There's many providers. Like we used to do our typing through the secretary in an Impact typewriter. Now there's software packages that are Word or WordPerfect. Similar things are happening in the recording industry. Many counties are using package software. They're using imaging technology, and Mr. Mastic will be the first one to say that imaging is not the issue. You know, it's a cost relationship. So we looked around 2 years ago, and we found that, you know, imaging is really a very useful tool. We could save 10 to 15% of our staff time. We could rededicate that to our archival responsibility, improve service to the customer. The customer could get the data faster, better. And like Mr. Matzik says, currently it's a key punch operation. People make errors with the best of intentions, whether it's Mr. Matzik's system or whatever system. If you have the key points, there will be errors. So imaging would basically be a letter perfect picture of what the customer presents to us. When we presented that last year, the legislature didn't fund that. The Office of Management and Budget decided to do a management audit on the operation for the recorder's office. They did a comprehensive analysis on the whole operation. They determined that there was many things that we had done that were correct and that we were limited. We had recognized that last year there was a bunch of statutory requirements that we were confronted with that really slowed us down. We came to you last year and you approved legislation to clean up at least the recording statutes. That has really helped, and we predicted that it would save a lot of time and effort, and it did. And so we could improve again on our operation. The last 2 years, last year in 1996, the contract was expired with Mr. Matznik, and he agreed to continue it without a formal signed agreement. And so basically he was kind enough to just keep going. In the meantime, we had asked repeatedly that there would be certain enhancements that would be made. Some of them he would agree to. He did an investment in some equipment. And again, the issue of cost comes up. We, because it's a no-cost agreement, could not go and pay him for his services without going for competitive bid and give all the other vendors an equal chance at it. We explained to Mr. Masnick, and he said, okay, well, I'll go and keep doing this. When the contract expired last year, our commissioner, Commissioner Shively, asked us, you know, hey, this is getting pretty hard for Mr. Masnick as well as for us, so why don't we issue a request for interest and go out to the community and see who else would be interested in doing an arrangement like Mr. Matzing is doing and what is out there in terms of technology. We did that in September, and we got 7 responses. 7 people that said either they would do it for free and provide us the service that Mr. Matzing is providing right now, or they had canned software that was state-of-the-art that we could use. Again, when we analyzed that information, most of the people that said they would do it for free would do it only based on the criteria that they had sole right to the data. Mr. Masnick is correct. He does not own the data. He has written the computer software program, so those are his proprietary rights, but the data that comes out of it is public information, and that's a real important criteria. So in terms of the issue of this oversight hearing, we as the state of Alaska, we feel that privatization is really important, that we went out for request for interest to see if people were out there willing to do something like Mr. Matznik. Mr. Matznik at the time did not respond to the request for information. We have talked to him since and will continue to talk to him about the arrangement. However, we are in a situation where we need to see what we can do. The no-cost arrangement with Mr. Masnick is now to the point where it does cost the state a lot of money. And the cost we can go into, they are basically an issue of control and when we want to make changes and when can we do it. And so the key criteria is that we need to get away from the no-cost agreement for the state's sake, as well for Mr. Masnick's sake. I just finished talking to Mr. Masnick again before this meeting, that my preference is that our operating budget is adequate to pay for the service that Mr. Masnick is providing. Without that, we need to look at some other alternatives. Our plan with our proposed capital project was to spend $1.2 million, which was basically for all the equipment that it takes to modernize the recorder's office. It is not necessarily to replace the Matznik system, although in the process you get a system that will work for the state, that will speed up the recordation, it will do the archiving function, and it will make the data available to the public at large. We feel our customers pay for that. The recorder's office is an operating budget that is fully funded by the users. There's no general fund going into that operation. The customers pay for the recordation, and over the last 5 years, they have put well over $7 million in excess of what it takes to fund the recording. We went to our customers and said, this is a plan. We have gone to Mr. Masnick. We said the same thing. We said, imaging will speed it up. Mr. Masnick agrees with that. His idea is that we should wait a little while, that the time will come, that the cost of the imaging technology will keep coming down, that that really is the way to go. We did surveys with the National Association of County Recorders. The larger counties are all switching to this. The smaller ones may not be, and whether or not the budget plays a role in that remains to be seen. For instance, we just were informed that the state of Colorado, most all counties are now on this imaging technology. What it does, and we have sent communication out to everybody, and it compares what the current system does to what you can get with this imaging technology. It will make the public data available to many more people in digital format. Mr. Matznik says that will deprive him of some business, and to the extent that the customer that pays for that information can get the information back out. It's like he says, it's a library. Everybody should have access to that. What we are saying is we're making it access a little bit more easily available. Also, what the system does that runs that software, because it's just like the word perfect, you can do sorts, you can do a couple other things. People in our offices could sort that stuff and get some information out of them that currently Mr. Matznik does provide, and he does charge a fee for that. What we are saying is, and again, Mr. Masnick is correct, it's not in the current capital budget as proposed by the Senate Finance Committee. If that budget was funded, we would get this system. People could get it, but we would provide it to all those people like Mr. Masick that are service providers and do specialized service for the title and the banking industry. So if you as a title agent will come to him and say, I want everything sorted in this area, Mr. Masick would still do that. What we are saying is, if you come to our office and you live in Nome, you can look up anything that's digitized throughout the state. Right now, somebody has to jump in an airplane, come to this site and look at it, or look at microfilm or whatever. If, Speaker of the House, the Homer office, the person is ill, the office closes because we don't have the staff. What we can do is put the terminal in the Fish and Game office, and people can still do their research through access digitally. So the proposed capital project would clearly take a major leap into new technology. We presented that to the title industry, the banking industry, and our key customers, and we have them make the judgment. We are the service providers. We feel that the people in the industry need to come to you and recommend it. We are the administrators of the public record. We give you the option. If you feel that it's premature to spend $1.2 million, or if you feel that that $1.2 million takes business away from Mr. Masick, that's your call. You guys are the ones that make the appropriations, and you need to listen to your constituency. And if they say it's premature, so be it. So that gets us to the point, what happens on July 1? And that's an important question. What our position was, and Commissioner Shively, when he asked for his request for information, says we need to get either to a system where somebody steps in from the private sector and does it all for free, or takes it over so they can make their money on the side, or we need to get to a system that we make it available to everybody, and then they can choose what they want to do. And since this last year, there's other people and other organizations that ask for this information that we have, the public data, and are trying to make this available on a competitive thing. I think there's a real market for that. I think it will speed up commerce. It will speed up a lot of things if you get this into an imaging technology. Whether or not, and like Mr. Montag says, he feels that you cannot use state funding to do this. You need to look at the private sector to do some of this. If that's your call, members of the committee, so be it. Clearly, we provided the idea. We have talked to our customers. Some of our customers have talked to you. Mr. Montag has an idea. We have an idea. And we'd be happy to enter in a dialogue. If it's premature, we can work through the interim and see how best to do this. We feel that clearly we can speed up the return of important documents such as deeds and all these kind of things by right now we have to keep punching, we keep them, we have to mail them back, we can do all these things. There's a lot of wonderful opportunities. Given that that CIP is not funded, then our position is we need to get to a position where we can continue this service, either with Mr. Masick and pay him for it, because this no-cost agreement, again, in our estimation, costs us a lot of money in terms of lost opportunity. Mr. Masick is a real talented person. He's also a real busy person. He gets a lot of calls on his time. And so sometimes, even if it's his best of intentions, he says, well, you know, I don't have time for this right now. Come see me after the elections or whatever. Well, we cannot wait for that all the time. And so our idea is that we take control of our custodial responsibility for the recorder's office, work with that, and provide Mr. Masick the tapes that he wants, and whether or not that can be accomplished in the short time frame. July 1 is what we're looking at. Mr. Masick is doubting that. Some of the people, and that's why I would like the recorder, Sharon Young, to talk about it, feel that we can do that. I'm not sure, you know, who is right. I am open to this. I have a good working relationship, I feel, with Mr. Masick. And again, I'm really in his debt in terms of all the service that he has provided. But we feel as an organization that we need to step out and make this work better.
Thank you very much, Mr. Buss. For the record, I'd like to point out that Representative Con Bundy is in attendance, and also Representative Gary Davis is in the audience for the record. Other questions of Mr. Buss? Representative Cotter.
Yes. You said earlier that that you're not keeping up now with some of your work. How are you going to keep up later? I mean, that struck me as odd. You want
through the chair? Representative Cowdery, what I was commenting on, that we're not keeping up with our archival responsibilities. We are keeping up with our recording responsibilities. Those are two distinct, separate issues. So what we're doing is we're recording and we're keeping up with that on a daily basis. What we're doing then is sitting on a shelf and hopefully get to, you know, catch up with that. That's where the ombudsman has come in. People that are familiar with our office, if you try to do any research and you pull out some of the old books, they're falling apart. Some of our microfilm is not very readable anymore. So a couple of years ago, the legislature funded a brand new camera so we can go back and film all these old records. That's what I mean, we're not catching up. We like to catch that all up so that when you come in, you know, we can even ship you the microfilm and you don't have to come to our office. But all those books are now physically in our office. They're just in terms, and I'm talking as a budget man now, rooms like this are filled with old records at $2 or $3 a square foot. What we like to do is clean it up, tell the department administration, cancel that part of the lease, we can save money. And there's many opportunities like this in the recorder's office where we can save staff, time, money, leasing costs. Again, if Mr. Masnik and the department can come to an agreement and be in a cost relationship, we have to go to bid. If Mr. Masnik would be the bidder because of his prior experience, we'd love to pay him for it. But under the current situation with no cost, we are completely dependent on Mr. Masnik. We cannot go out and say, hey, now tomorrow we'd like to change all these programs. Could you please do it? We have asked him that. He has been very accommodating. He says he'll get to it on his schedule. I've heard him say, well, you know, that might cost $100,000 out of my personal budget. Now, that's not really a desirable situation for him, but to the point that he feels it's important to his operation, he can make those decisions. What I'm saying as a public servant is that we, as the managers of that record, we like to be in the driver's seat, and if we feel it's important to improve that record and pay Mr. Masnik for it, that's the preferred option. And that's not the way it is, so we looked for alternatives. That's why we came up with the $1.2 million capital project. We feel that that significantly improves accessibility to all the records, plus the archival function for everybody. We would still maintain the service that Mr. Masnik could provide to the public because we give him a daily tape, at, you know, just like anybody else can come in. GeoNorth right now is one of the agencies that start coming in and asking us for that information. We have to give them a copy of Mr. Masnik's data because it's public access, like Mr. Masnik said. It's not his propriety right, so he runs it on his computer. Once he runs it, anybody that comes in, any of you, if you come in tomorrow and you say, I want to copy the tape and I want to play with it, we give it to you at whatever it costs for the tape. And then the dead data is available to you.
Mr. Best, you said you had you put out a request for proposals or interest. Could you provide the committee with a copy of that?
I have a copy of this. We have the responses, and we can make copies of that as well.
But your testimony was that you had 7 responses.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding of what you said, you didn't have 7 responses. You had 7 non-responsive bidders because they didn't meet their spec of being no cost, and they desired the sole exclusive rights to the data. So that would not have been responsive, would it?
Yeah, depending on how you look at it, whether it's responsive or not. We got 7 people to respond to the RFI. The criteria under which they responded, there was different feedback. And we analyzed these. Like I say, some of them would do it at quote-unquote no cost with the condition that they would get sole propriety rights to the records. Or one even said, if he can get copies of all of Mr. Masnik's computer programs, he'd be happy to do this. And, you know, again, Mr. Masnik spent all this time and effort to do this. He's not going to give that away. So that's not really fair. What my point was that is, you know, Mr. Masnik has seen the wisdom of running this for all the last 11 years. We thought when we ask for anything, we need to at least see if anybody else is interested in doing something similar.
Very good. Representative Cotter, you have a question.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood, but you were asking for $1.2 million in capital funding for this, and did I hear that with or without this funding, you was going to proceed with this?
No, let me correct that, if that's your understanding, Representative. Okay. What the $1.2 million would do, it would completely retool our offices. We would get imaging equipment with all the hardware that it would take. If we, like right now, the capital project doesn't have it, so what we have then is the option to duplicate Mr. Motznik's system. That's what our fallback position is for July 1. We, you know, are looking at this and say, is that possible? We talked to our computer people, and they said that they feel that they can make it work. Mr. Motznik is skeptical. Again, Sharon Young can comment, and from that point of view, we feel we can continue to provide the service that we have been provided in the recording site. We would not do the imaging and all the fancy digitizing that the $1.2 million would propose.
Will hard copies and everything, microfilm copies, be available? Will continue to be available to the private sector with the new tech?
That's correct.
Mr. Buss, I think for purposes of this discussion today, you should assume that you're not going to get the $1.2 million.
That's correct. I'm assuming that. And I'm just explaining the background. So July 1, without the $1.2 million, we would build a system that is like Mr. Motznik's system, and then we would make the tapes available to Mr. Motznik. He can do whatever he does for the title industry under his current arrangements and can keep doing it. But that would give us the control to update that program as we see fit, whenever we see fit.
But Mr. Buss, if I could, how many scanners could you buy for about $7,200?
I think, you know, the answer is that if I look at my detail, I can tell you, you know,
just approximately
a number without the software to run whatever you scan, it is not going to do you anything. So.
Well, the reason I asked that, I was curious why, if you're, I know you have a tight budget and you're very concerned about that, but then why in fact did your department raise the state recorder's salary range from range 20 to a range 22 last year?
That's a fair question. We basically looked at the Recorder's Office series. If you look through the detail, which you must have by asking this question, you'll see that most everybody in the Recorder's Office is a range 10 or a range 12. The recording responsibility is a very serious one. The Department of Administration asked for a complete analysis of all the positions in the Recorder's Office. They classified those positions, and Sharon Young, as the state recorder, with the responsibility that she has as a section chief and all the commensurate responsibilities, was classified at a range 22, which is what all other section chiefs in the state of Alaska are paid. She is responsible for a staff of 50 people. She has 14 offices. She has a significant judiciary responsibility for all these records. And the Department of Administration classification system decided that she was never paid correctly, and therefore they classified her as a range 22.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Cotter.
Yeah. So you intend to duplicate the, whether you get the money or not, to duplicate the Mostic system.
We intend to automate the Recorder's Office system that is our system that is currently run by Mr. Mostic. That's correct.
And then without having any disruption to the public?
That's our plan.
I'm still getting back to the dollars. How can you afford to duplicate a system that's been in place this long for within your own budget, unless your budget is really inflated now or something that we've overlooked?
Like I said, the no-cost agreement goes at a great cost in our operation. So what we decided was that it was worth our effort to get control of that so that we could streamline our operation and have control, and that was a decision that we felt was a wise one. We are continually facing downward pressures. As I speak, we have done a layoff notice in the recorder's office. In spite of that, we feel that we need to have a system that we have control over, and if Mr. Mastin could provide it, and if the legislature so chooses to fund a cost relationship, then, you know, we'd be happy to do that as well. With the way it is right now, we feel that, again, with all respect to Mr. Mazik, he has done a great job, but the recorder's office system is not always his priority. Changes that we ask for, if there's a cost to him, he may frown up, and then he makes the decision whether or not to make that enhancement. We feel that it is our responsibility. We are charged with that responsibility by our role being the state recorder, and so we feel we need to take control of
it. Very good. If you're going to do that, Mr. Buss, who's going to pay, and where are you going to get the software?
The software is what we are writing between now and June 30th is what the plan would be.
You're writing your own software in-house?
Mm-hmm.
Further questions, Mr. Buss? Representative Hudson, you had a question.
I had one, I would like to have Bob an opportunity. I know we've got tied to other ones here, so somebody else to testify. I'd like to ask Bob.
We'll bring him up later. Thank John. You. Make sure you note your question. Yeah. I would say that.
I know we got the other.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have you ever consulted with the Church of Latter-day Saints about it, using them and as a free and source of microfilming the records of the state of Alaska?
I personally have not, and I don't know if Sharon Young is on the phone.
Perhaps we can direct that question to her. She is, and we're going to have her as next witness.
Okay.
And I would say, in concluding this, that I would suggest that you're right. We do make the calls regarding what the policies are, and it seems to us that we should be open for business in this state. This is an extraordinary one. Representative Hudson, did you have a
question? Thanks, Chairman. Yes, I remember my question. I was thinking, Nico, that we have two separate interests that you're trying to achieve. One is the recorder's responsibility that you have by statute, and the other one is the archival responsibility that you have. And it sounds to me like what you're aiming for is a one-fix panels both. And my suggestion is, this is really, for me, and anyway, Mr. Chairman, difficult for me to follow, even though I was commissioner of administration when they had the recorder's office in my department. And I've seen the recorder's responsibilities bounced around about the states. I think for a while it was in the court system and DNR. I mean, it's been around a lot of different places. Admin, when I had it, as a matter of fact. But it surely would be a good idea, I think, Nico, to put something down in plain language that separates the two, the recorder and the archival, and essentially where you are and precisely what you're looking for. And then I think Bob and all the rest of us would have a good understanding of where the problem is here, because as I'm listening to this whole exchange here, and it sounds to me like the department is preparing to go ahead and take care of the matter anyway. I mean, you're going to rewrite the programs, and I'm presuming that's for not only for the recording responsibilities, but also the archival. Is that correct? Or is it just the recorder side?
That's just the recorder side.
Okay. Thank you. We do have some other witnesses and some other bills today, so I would like to go to Ms. Young now. Thank you very much, Mr. Buss.
Yeah, before I sign off, I definitely would like to extend the invitation for all of you to come and tour operations so you get a firsthand view of it and see, you know, what kind of operation we do run and what kind of constraints we have. And I'll be happy to answer any questions after Ms. Young.
Just a comment. You comment that $2 to $3 a square foot in storage now. That's kind of exciting there to me too.
They're in the Frontier building.
Yeah, right. I understand.
Those records need to be available to the customer, and so that's the problem.
I understand.
We like to sit in offsite at 75 cents a square foot, or even better yet, in a small little box.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to go on a teleconference and have testimony from Sharon Young, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sharon Young. I am the state recorder here in Anchorage. I would like to follow up on a couple of points that were raised in the prior testimony. One, it has to do with privatization itself, privatizing any of the recording functions. We're not opposed to that, and I need to emphasize that. In fact, we feel that making the information, the recording information, available to a wider number of customers in a multitude of media formats would actually stimulate entrepreneurial activity throughout the state. There are many vendors that already purchase copies of recording and filing information from us in both tape and microfilm format. And these vendors are able to market a value-added product that is really unaffected by the acquisition of a new system. And that new system could be designed to streamline our internal operations and improve customer service. More importantly, I would like to address the point that the indexing system, which is maintained by Mott-Snick Computer Services, is only one function of many functions that are performed by the recorder's office. There are many layers of functions. Some of them are manual. There's much duplication of data entry, but each of these functions is required by statute, and each is essential to the recording process. What we have learned by observing and studying other new technologies in other jurisdictions is that there are comprehensive systems that combine all of these functions: recording, stamping, receipting, indexing, scanning, filming, and document return into a single system. We feel that eliminating layers of this process, where we have so many various layers to go through, is the only way that we can streamline the workflow enough to create efficiencies in that process and enable us to do more with less in the future. The current process is very labor-intensive. Each document that comes through our office, and there are about 250,000 of them each year, each of them is handled on an average of 10 to 12 times throughout this process that takes weeks to complete. So it's not a matter of just adding, for example, imaging technology to an existing layered system. You have to be able to combine the functions and work laterally in order to distribute the workflow and create those efficiencies. A couple of other points I'd like to follow up on. One is that this has been a valuable function that has been served by the operation of the indexing system by the private sector, but it has not been without cost to the state. There have been operational costs associated with duplicate data entry. We have to enter the material into Mr. Mott-Snick's system. We have to turn around and input much of the same information into the state's revenue and billing system. There is much loss in terms of the duplication that occurs and the many manual processes on which this indexing system depends. We also have an inability to obtain specified management reports to meet specific criteria to support our operations, or to respond to customer inquiries who come to us for specific report information out of the public record. We continue to have to refer those to Mr. Mott-Snick for customized extractions or other information that he might be able to provide with the state's information. Finally, I would like to emphasize that we did undertake a questionnaire, customer survey questionnaire, over a two-year period. And the results of that are summarized in the OMB audit, which was a very extensive and thorough audit of our entire operation. But most importantly, the survey questions indicated that there is quite a discomfort level among our customers when it comes to using the existing computer system or locating the records through that system. Of all of the questions that were included in the customer survey, that one yielded a negative response in about one out of every four responses. So that was a concern to us. It continues to be a concern, and we're trying to do everything we can to improve our operations, make more information available to a wider number of our customers in the formats that they require. I guess I will be happy to answer questions at this time. I would also be happy to follow up with any written responses to some of the points that were raised by Mr. Mosny earlier. But I will leave it at that and just be available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Young. Is there questions? Representative Cotter.
Yes. Is it true that you've not, DNR has not developed an RFP for to a supplier for the hardware or software for this new system? And if it is, I wonder how can a timetable that we're talking about now be established? If you could comment, have you? I guess the question is, have you already got an RFP out to for a contract to a supplier, and how long will that take to finalize?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are working on an RFP, but given the grim situation involving the capital budget, our timetable may have to be pushed back on that. We originally envisioned having an RFP ready to go by the 1st of June, so that the award of that could coincide with the funding should that occur in this legislative session on July 1. Unfortunately, if it comes to pass that we do not proceed with the modernization system, there would be no RFP until a later time. We have not issued an RFP at this point, but we have done exhaustive study, and as Nico mentioned earlier, there were many responses to the request for information that came in earlier that also were enabled us to put together the specific parameters of the capital proposal as it was submitted.
Thank you. A comment and one more question. It seems that rather than keep the status quo, you plan to duplicate Mosnick's system and create a crisis for a short time or a long time to the public. I just don't understand that kind of thinking. But anyway, my question, knowing and get back to budget things, knowing how systems grow and continue to increase in cost, has someone at your office or yourself determined what the annual cost will be for maintaining this system and what cost will be eliminated by this new system? And if you don't have that answer, I would like to have it in writing if we could.
Perhaps Nico can address that since that's actually being handled through another section in our division.
Okay, yeah.
Question. Thank you. Along that same line, Ms. Jones, I'm very distressed to read the press release from the commissioner's office of 4/25/97, where it indicates that given the present circumstances and the fact that you were in all probability not going to receive the capital budget monies that you requested, that the commissioner has gone so far as to say that creating this interim indexing program is going to be a stopgap measure. It's going to be a very bare bones temporary solution, and it's going to cause disruptions in the service and possible backlogs as a result, including service disruptions and backlogs. I mean, I'm very concerned about this, and I don't understand why the state as a policy would be going down this path when they can anticipate these types of disruptions and the furthering accumulation of backlogs. I mean, what is the reason here?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our intent is that at this time that the transition would be fully transparent to the public, that there would be no adverse impact of any kind. But until we see this system up and running and have it tested and can assure that it is doing what the MOSNIC system has done as far as indexing information and in many respects improving the functions under the current system, until we can see that tested, we cannot be sure there will be no backlog, but it's our intent that they be minimized and as transparent as possible for the public as well as for our internal operations.
Well, Ms. Young, it can't be transparent. I mean, even in your press release, you admit it's not going to be. And that's what's really disturbing here. I mean, how can you in 7 weeks create a transparent, seamless transition? I think it's impossible.
Well, I need to emphasize that this transition is, the programmers for that are in the computer section of the support services division. They are not part of the recorder's office component. And I would have to defer to Nico on responding to the time frames and the time that is associated with developing that product.
Are there further questions, Ms. Young? Excuse me. Thank you very much, Ms. Young. Is there anybody else on the teleconference line that wishes to testify on the recorder's office issue? Anybody else? Is anybody else in the in Juneau that wishes to testify on this? Mr. Mazza, can you come forward? I think there's a couple of questions wrap up on this situation. And if you'd like to make a closing wrap up remark, feel free to go ahead.
Okay, a couple of comments that were made by Nico and Sharon. The $1.2 million for imaging, that does not at all solve indexing errors. They were saying, if we got all this money, then we would be doing our job right. In index, you have to look at the document. You've got to find the name, and you got to key the name in right. That does not change if you're doing imaging or you're doing it now with microfilm or whatever. Okay.
Mr. Mazin, they're not going to get the $1.2 million. Right. So given that, what's going to occur?
So their imaging, their indexing errors are something that needs to be addressed, and that's what I was trying to do in saying in continuing the free service, I really want them to start looking at the errors that are made in the index. That was the only condition that I put on continuing the free service. Okay, and what they're looking at, like, I think you're right, that I don't see any way in the world that they can get this system going. I wrote it. I say there's man years of effort in writing these programs. And I've operated the system for 30 years.
Have not. Is there off-the-shelf software that could be usable, or it has to be designed for...
No, this has to be compatible with the existing system. You cannot start up a new recording office system and then say, well, I'm going to search the title up to this point till July 97. Now I'm going to go to this new system. That would be a mess.
Further questions of Mr. Mazza?
I asked some questions about the how in your mind can they afford to duplicate something that you maybe have worked on 20 or 30 years and have it up. Magic, I guess, and maybe your comments on some of my other questions.
In my understanding of the state data center, they would not even allow them to do what all we do. Right now, the NOM recorder's office can request a grantor-grantee index of a range of serial numbers. I wrote the software that creates that online, prints it in a printer in their office. My understanding is that the state data center will not allow to route print to a printer at a remote location immediately. So. The duplication of the current system, I don't think even if the programmers could write it, that the state DP shop would support it. So I don't think so.
Do you have anything more to add or
something? I made a few notes from Nico there. One of the things he said, one of the reasons for doing this is they need to get control.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's this. I mean, I've been at this for a lot of years, and 5 years ago there was a proposal from DNR for $330,000 to write the existing system on their system. Okay, and at that time they had to agree that they couldn't do it as well as what I was doing it. And the reason was they wanted to get control. That was before imaging was a viable solution. I'd just like to restate that this, I can assure you, this is a turf war. They just want to have control, have us out of there. We have offered to make a proposal to incorporate imaging into the current system. Not interested. Okay, we could probably provide the system they want at maybe half of what they're going to have to pay it on their own. Not interested. Okay, they want to do the system. Sharon keeps talking about duplicate entry. What she's talking about is when we first started the system, the recorder's office did not account for each transaction. They keyed the dollars that they charge into our system. We produced an accounting report, which then they used that to make their general ledger entries. Okay. When this was several years ago, 5-6 years ago, they decided that they have to issue a receipt for each individual that comes in. Okay. The question then was, do we do that through the Motsnik system or do we do that on the state system? Okay. They decided that they would do it on the state system. As soon as they had it up, they would drop keying the information into my system. Well, they had troubles. They got it up on the state system issuing the receipts, but their programmers could never get the information, the statistics that they needed out of the state system. So that's why they do the duplicate entry. They do the duplicate entry because the first decision did not follow through. And in even at that, if they keyed the information into my system, I'm on a mainframe, the state's on a mainframe, I can dump that information and go into the current accounting system. There's no reason for her to be doing the duplicate entry, but she's not interested in stopping the duplicate entry. And this is why I'm saying this is a turf war, because the things that have been complained about, they're not interested in solving. That's my problem.
Any of the questions that we asked, and I know you've got other people here waiting, I would ask them maybe to put it in writing and we continue this on, or you're the chairman, by the way.
Right.
I appreciate you holding this hearing, too.
President Sanders, do you have a question?
Yeah, could I ask one question? I guess the question is, am I right or wrong? Can I ask you or tell you kind of how I'm seeing this, and you tell me if I'm wrong, because I'd like to be corrected if I am. This looks to me like a high-tech version of laying off the road grader. They're not getting their money. They're going to lay you off. The public's going to be right. mad and right. come back.
They're going to create a crisis. And the public is going to demand that you give them the money to fix the crisis, and it's going to be millions.
So I don't misunderstand it.
No. That's the situation.
That's the way it looked to me.
That's my understanding of the situation. Having been in it for all these years.
Very good. I have one question for Mr. Buss, if you could return here. Maybe a couple. Mr. Buss, there's been some comments in the public that Ms. Young has been telling certain institutions, banks at all, and perhaps title companies and so forth in the Anchorage area that I'm aware of, that they're going to, if they would get behind the state's endeavors, that they're going to be getting their information free, which heretofore they've been purchasing from Mr. Mosnick. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the proposal that we had in the capital project was that if you wanted that information, you could just come to our office and get whatever you wanted, then that was how you could get it for free. If there would be manipulation by any of our staff, we would not do that. We would defer to the service providers and say, do that. But it's like in anything, if you have a database and you can call that database up, then you can use that data for whatever. It's like the way we go to our public libraries right now. You can go on the internet, you can get a lot of information for free. It's all public records. Our public records are available for the public, and if they want to look it up, that's fine. If they want prints or they want any extra work, they would have to pay for that. The free reference was to the fact that the software had certain manipulation capabilities and search capabilities that people could do on their own. They would not necessarily have to go to a service provider, because they say, okay, give me all the National Bank of Alaska transactions. They could push the button and they could thumb through it, just like any search engine on a database. And that's, right now, the system doesn't allow that, so that's an enhancement in the system. The free, I want to clarify again, the customer paid to get the data recorded. So the customer paid for it in the first place. Then if they want to get to that and they want to spend the time and effort to look it up, and that is available to them, as long as it doesn't require our interaction, that would be free. if there would be manipulation or title agents or whatever, we say, go see Mr. Mosnick, go see GeoNorth, whoever the service provider is.
Yes, and mostly third parties, though. They're looking at the information. It's not the customer and the people who have paid the recording fees.
Whoever,
it's certain service organizations that they've retained, or the public would maintain a service provider to look up that information for a specific purpose, normally.
And that's the public record. The public record is available to whoever wants to spend the time to look it up.
Right.
Now, if you say that you'd rather have them pay a private provider for that, then, again, I would defer to you. That's your policy call. We say what is the art of the possible. Again, I encourage you to look around the different counties in the lower 48, how they do it. That's how it's being done. And what it does to the private sector, what we feel is that it will enhance commerce. And you talk to our customers and have them be the judge. We bring these ideas to you. If you feel that that's not appropriate, which I understand based on the Senate version of the capital project, you say, it's, you know, we're not ready for this. Fair. You know, if you want to look at, say, you know, Nico or Sharon Young as the recorder, we pay you to be the professional recording archivist, but we defer right now to Mr. Mosnick. We'll see in the interim whatever we want to do. That's fair. That's your call. We brought some ideas to you. We have some solutions. We feel that to provide the service that we are chartered with, that we need to go a certain direction, and that's what we have chosen.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Buss. We do need to move on to some other business. I would just say that this committee will be issuing a letter with the consent of the committee on this issue, and I suggest that you return to the bargaining table with Mr. Mosnick so we don't have a crisis in this state and something that could interrupt the commerce of the activities of the state of Alaska. Thank you very much for coming.
I'd be happy to talk to Mr. Mosnick and to the committee. Again, with the no-cost requirement, there are certain things that we can and cannot do, and if you are aware of that, that's fine.
Thanks, sir.
Answered.
Right. And any questions, Mr. Buss, if questions that come up, if you could, you or Ms.
Sure.
Young could provide the committee
yes.
with that, we'd appreciate
we'd
that.
That.
Thank you very much. This oversight hearing is closed. Next, we'd like to take up Senate Bill 88. Senate Bill 88, an act relating to the Board of Public Accountancy, extending the termination date of the Board of Public Accountancy and providing for an effective date. We've heard this bill and its other permutation. What was the reference? You know, at any rate, this bill we have had before us before. We're using the Senate vehicle. What was the House bill?
I can't remember.
That's okay. Oh, House Bill 140. We already have it in our notes. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for the excellent committee work, Mrs. Armstrong. With that, the chair would entertain a motion on this bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to entertain a motion to move committee substitute for Senate Bill 88, Labor and Commerce, / E, onto out of the committee, onto the next with zero fiscal note with individual recommendation.
Are there objections? Hearing none, so moved. Next.
Go ahead.
Let's see here.
This is an expensive tingle to get here.
Yeah, right. Next, I'd like to take up House Bill 203. Welcome. Representative Dyson, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, sir. If
203.
Right. Let's get organized here a little bit.
I believe we have supplied you a committee substitute dated 4/24/97.
203. Yes. Wait a minute. We want to make sure everybody has a copy of that. John, did you
Okay.
Bear with us a moment, Representative Dyson. We'll get our act together here. Find it?
Yes, got it.
Thank you, sir. Would you care to continue now that I've done copying?
I think that we had most of this discussion before. This the trail I started down in November, rising out of some concern from some folks I talked to were struggling because with some consumer business fraud, because the state attorney general's office has been largely out of this business and the Better Business Bureau has limited capacity. When we were here before, there were several concerns that came up. If you're looking at the committee substitute, you look from page 2.
Excuse me, Representative Dyson, is that version L now?
Yes.
Perhaps we should have a motion to adopt
Mr.
that.
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Hudson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move committee substitute House Bill number 203, 22497, / L, adoption before the committee for discussion purposes, sir.
Very good. Any objections? Hearing none, so moved. Representative Dyson, could you explain the differences?
Yeah, over on page 2, at the bottom of the page, line 29 through 31, we believe that this takes care of the concerns raised by the chairman of the committee.
Bear with me here a moment. This is the defendant to the cause of action.
Yes.
And so you've added a subsection B here to correspond with the award that would be made to the plaintiff in subsection A. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct. So this levels the playing field, and certainly if the cause of action isn't found justified, then the defendant has this mechanism recovered. Subsequent to our discussion, I thought about, and I think somebody here triggered it, but a thought about how someone could use this kind of an action to gain a competitive advantage, you know, and virtually put a parenthesis in somebody else's business. So I added subparagraph C on page 3. In an action brought under 45 and numbers, if the court finds the action was brought by the plaintiff to obtain a competitive business advantage, and the plaintiff is not the prevailing party, the court shall award the defendant costs, as provided in court rule, full reasonable attorney fees and prevailing really reasonable rate, and any damage suffered by the defendant as a result of the plaintiff's allegations. Now, I don't remember anyone in the committee directing us to do something on this paragraph. Seems reasonable to me. So these are the changes we have made in the committee substitute to take up care of most of the items that we understood came up in the last hearing.
President Dyson, the term by court rule, I don't recall, could you refresh the committee's memory? Is this Rule 82, or is this a different, is there another court rule that would apply here in this instance? Or?
May I inquire of my...
Representative Croft, I did not see you back there. Sir, I would have recognized your presence. For the record, please let the record show that the Representative Croft is joining us at the table, please.
Mr. Chairman, we'd talked about full costs on it. It's my understanding from the drafters that there's some question about whether that requires changing a court rule, some difference of opinion as to whether the court rule on costs needed to be changed. And rather than get into that whole area, we just said you are due costs as the defined by the applicable court rule, sort of to avoid conflict on it. I read the court rules as saying anytime you're entitled to them, this is what we mean by costs, but not really getting into the area of when or you are or not entitled to them. But it's a little ambiguous, so they thought that wording would avoid us getting conflicted with any.
Mr. Schwartz is online, too. Maybe he can help us out in that regard. Yeah. Are there further questions of the bill sponsor?
No.
Okay. Why don't we go online now? Is there any local testimony? Let's, can we, if we could go to Anchorage and have, we do have a Kate Remy for House Bill 203.
In committee, I've been asked to come and testify today in support of Consumer Protection Bill 203.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please, ma'am?
My name is Kate Remy. I work for Alaska Public Interest Research Group as a consumer advocate, and I've been asked to come here today by representing our membership in support of House Bill 203 to put consumer protection language back in the state of Alaska. I'd like to compliment to B. Schwartz for his hard work and also for House Bill 142, which I've just been getting a better look at. We believe that consumer crime is a serious crime, that it affects people's lives. There's a tendency to treat this crime as white-collar crime and not as seriously as people who are victimized by violence. This week, I was at a committee with high school students at Diamond High in Anchorage, and the consensus of these growing juniors and seniors is that the state of Alaska does not prosecute white-collar crime in the same way that they prosecute crimes that are committed with weapons or where violence is involved. They do realize, though, that in many cases, people's lives are seriously affected and in some cases destroyed by being conned. And I know from working for 5 years as a consumer advocate that we get many, many calls in my office asking, what can we do? Is there a law? Is there consumer protection at the Attorney General's office that can help us? I think that because it affects the daily lives of everyone, regardless of their profession or their class, their economic status, that we should recognize the presence of a legal force from the Attorney General's office, and that is absolutely mandatory in deterring this type of crime. We believe that the support that we would receive from the Attorney General's office if there was more bite, legal bite, in the Consumer Protection Office would deter what I feel is a rising crime, consumer crime. We have produced a report on consumer protection, the Alaska Perspective, which was written by Dr. Janet Campbell. And I'd be happy to send a copy of this report to the committee for your review with statistical information on statistics gathered from other states in the United States that have consumer protection, as well as some of the things that we've worked with David and the BBB. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Remy. We would appreciate getting that information, and perhaps if you could provide it to the bill sponsor, he can distributed. I'm afraid we're getting near that transitional period here. We wouldn't want to fall through the slats. So if you could provide it to Representative Dyson, and we'd ask that he distribute that to members of this committee and also the Judiciary Committee, which this bill will be heard on in its next step, we'd greatly appreciate that.
I'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
And before we go to Mr. Schwartz, there is some live testimony here in Juneau, and Representative Dyson, would you join us at the table here, sir. We can take some further testimony here.
Chairman.
Representative Hudson.
Just for my own edification, who the prime sponsor, does the committee substitute that we've recently adopted include these amendments that we've got the extra copy?
It has not. And we prepared that to deal with what I think Representative Ryan brought up, and that is at our discretion. That is an option that we can go forward with.
Sure, why don't we go ahead and take the testimony, and we'll take those up for discussion. Ms. Mulligan, please. And please identify yourself, and we're running kind of behind, so if you could keep her down to...
I'm going to be very, very brief.
Thank you, ma'am. Welcome to the committee.
I'm Peggy Mulligan of the Capital City Task Force by AARP, and I was here a couple of weeks ago. And I just want to say that we also support the committee substitute that Mr. Dyson has brought out, and that's it.
Very good, Ms. Mulligan. Thank you. Is there any questions?
No.
Well, welcome to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just ask, is it your sense that with the seniors here that they are being approached and preyed upon by some predators?
Very definitely. That's our priority for the summer, is to put out knowledge about telecommunication or telemarketing fraud, and we feel that we can educate the public, not only seniors, but other citizens too, about the consumer fraud. Yes, I definitely think that it's the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, we'd like to hear from Vera Gazowitz, ma'am.
I didn't, just observing. I'm observing.
Well, welcome to the committee, Ms. Gazaway. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Since you gave me an opportunity, I would say that Older Persons Action Group also supports this.
Well, very good. We'll put that on the record, ma'am.
Thank
you very much. Next, we'll go ahead and, before we have Mr. Schwartz's testimony, Mr. Dyson, Representative Dyson, perhaps we should... is there one amendment here, or how many is in this?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we should move the amendment for discussion purposes, so in case we have any questions of council, we can ask about that. Representative Cotter.
Yes, I'd like to move the amendment that you just mentioned, and if you can identify it.
We'll mark this as amendment number one for purposes of discussion only.
To the original.
Oh, this is to Representative Dyson. I've just been pointed out that perhaps the line
H2
the line numbers maybe
on one, it should be page one line I guess
see.
It still is 9 and 10.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Are they okay then?
The other one is not.
The other one is not. It would be lines 4 through 7.
4 through 7. That's deleting the subsection F of 4555.31, and going back to its the original. Okay, Representative Dyson, sir, could you explain the amendment, and then we can go on with the testimony?
Yeah. This was a concern that was raised here, and it really addressed. The amendment takes out of the bill the line that says or is otherwise aggrieved, and it takes out any award of damages for anything subjected. It's not a material damage, quantifiable, then it's eliminated, and that's what page 1, line 9 and 10 does. Page 2, line 3 through 7 deletes that whole section 3. And eliminates that subparagraph F. Just to make it consistent.
Right. So that let me understand. I was interrupted there. We're going back to the original F language as existing in statute now. Remove the words "the cause of action arose" and say the loss resulted from that act. Okay. So there is a monetary loss that's attributable. And then we had that discussion, I think.
Yep.
Excuse me, we do have a forum. Let's go to the teleconference and take the testimony from David Schwartz, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, regarding House Bill CS HB 203, unfortunately, I have not been given a copy of it. So, from what I can only respond to what I've heard testify. I've attempted to get a copy of it at this office here at the OIO in Anchorage, and apparently, they don't have a copy of it. And I wasn't aware that a CS had actually been completed and was going to be presented for discussion today. I knew it was going to come up, but did not know that there was actually a CS issued. So I'm at a loss to give very specific feedback as to the language in the CS, other than with respect to the attorney's fees additions. That were discussed. It sounds like the CS provisions in the attorney fees section respond to the concerns that were brought up in the initial hearing on House Bill 203 a week or so ago.
If I might, Ms. Schwartz, if you could, because I do have a question I wanted to ask you, if I could just very briefly read you this one addition. It's in the section 4550537, it's the attorney fees, costs, and damages. We've added a subsection B that says, in an action brought under AS 4550471-4550561, the court shall award the defendant costs as provided by court rule and full reasonable attorney fees at the prevailing reasonable rate if the action is found to be frivolous. End of sentence and subsection. Now, my question is, number one, there being no vexatious litigation statute, is there a is there just a common law definition of frivolous, or is there anything in statute we can hang our hat on to know what this means?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, of course, Rule 82 in the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure does contain a subsection dealing with vexatious and frivolous litigation, and judges make this kind of determination all the time under Rule 82. So, and case law, I believe, discusses numerous instances in which litigation has been found to be vexatious or frivolous. So I think there's a common understanding in the Superior Court and the District Courts and the Supreme Court of Alaska as to what constitutes vexatious or frivolous litigation. I think it's a determination that courts make on a routine basis whether or not the litigation is frivolous in order to assess Rule 82 fees at this time. I don't think it's going to be a new concept at all.
Well, very good. That satisfies my concerns. In regard to the terms used in what you have in the original bill under the attorney fees, costs, and damages, the terms by court rule, which is used in the as it relates to the defendant also now, would that be Rule 82, or are we talking about the full cost, or what? The we've got court rule, we got full reasonable attorney fees. Now, what are we talking about here?
I believe that under Rule 82, a court could award full reasonable attorney fees.
It's not just a percentage of the fees, or anything?
Well, that's the routine award under Rule 82. It's generally 20% of attorney fees. But Rule 82 also allows a court to adjust the attorney fees depending upon the circumstances.
Is that President Dyson? I mean, we're both going, Is that the intent here, or what was your intent, sir?
Our intent was, Mr. Chair, that the defendant who prevails in the course of action.